Rainmaker FM.
Copyblogger FM is brought to you by StudioPress Sites, the complete hosted solution that makes WordPress fast, secure, and easy without sacrificing power or flexibility. Feel free to upload your own WordPress theme or use one of the 20 beautiful StudioPress themes that are included and just one click away. Explore all the amazing things you can do with the StudioPress site, and you'll understand why it offers a lot more than traditional WordPress hosting. No matter how you'll be using your site, we have a plan to fit your needs and your budget. To learn more, visit rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. That's rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. Hey, everybody, it is so good to see you again. Welcome back to Copyblogger FM, the content marketing podcast. Copyblogger FM is about emerging content marketing trends, interesting disasters, and enduring best practices, along with the occasional rant. My name is Sonia Simone. I'm the Chief Content Officer for Rainmaker Digital. You can catch me at least once a week over on the Copyblogger blog, and I also write some more mindset and ranty kind of stuff at Remarkable Communication. Remember, you can always get the show notes for every episode, and that will include links, often includes some free extras, by pointing your browser to copyblogger.fm, and you can also get the complete show archive there. So today is fun. I've got guests. I always enjoy having guests. I am talking with Shane Snow and Joe Lazauskas of Contently. Since Shane and Joe had so much to say about storytelling, we broke this podcast into two parts for you. This is part two of the Storytelling Edge, and you can get part one by pointing your browser to copyblogger.fm. Well, you mentioned a word kind of close to the top of the episode, and I think it's a word that people feel is not, it has a weird place in the conversation. So we've been kind of talking about art, right? We've been talking about, you know, fluency and Aristotle and relatable characters and plot. And you mentioned the word data. So I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding the relationship, the healthy relationship between data. Like lots of, especially in the bigger organizations, there is a lot of data. There's a lot of data-driven strategy. How does that connect with, you know, all this fuzzy, arty stuff about plot and characters in Star Wars?
I think I got this one.
All right. I just came up with a couple good analogies I can do.
All right. I'll toss it to you.
We like analogies.
I'll set up the alley-oop. So this is something that we... is at the core of how we approach content strategy. At Contently, we take a very data-driven approach to content strategy using our own first-party data from the analytics we have around clients in different industries, as well as third-party tools. And there's an awesome amount of data nowadays. I think the way that this ties with creativity is we have such an ability now to understand what our target audience is interested in, what they're searching for, what they're sharing, what topics they're interested in the most, what formats they like to consume content, and what channels they share it on. And we have the ability as well to do audits, understand where there's a lot of content on a certain topic our audience is interested in and where there's white space. And when you find that white space, perhaps it's like short form Facebook videos about quantum computing or cryptocurrencies. Those you can use those different combinations of white space that you find about your audience to unleash your creativity. It's the idea of creative constraints, right? If I asked you, Sonia, to write a poem right now, it might take you a half hour to think of anything. But if I ask you to write a haiku, you're probably going to come up with something in 5 minutes because those constraints actually unleash our creativity. So as content marketers, we should always be focused first and foremost, not with what we want to say, but with what our audience is interested in that relates to our brand and that we can talk about. We want to take a cue from what their challenges are, what they care about. And then when we find that space that they're interested in, that we can play in, that's not super competitive, that can unleash our creativity and give us a lot of ammo to come up with those specific story ideas that we unleash on the world. And I bet Shane has a good analogy for this.
So I just thought of this. So of the two of us, I'm the one that's a nerd and Joe's the one that understands how basketball works. So my nerdy analogy for this is that Data is kind of like Gandalf showing up to Bilbo's house and setting him on this adventure. Mm-hmm. Data is kind of what puts you on the path that you then need to take all of your creative skills and go down and find a story and make something great. Data is not about making the story for you. That's how you get generic and boring stories, but data can tell you the direction you need to go. And I think that the haiku analogy is really good too, because it can give you those constraints so you're not just going off in the middle of nowhere. There's a really good book that's going to come out in June, I think the second week of June, by a friend of Joe's and mine named Alan Gannett. He's the founder of TrackMaven. And the book is called The Creative Curve. And one of the things that I just read an early copy of it, so I'm kind of excited about this. One of the things that he talks about is the story of the guy who's the head of content for Netflix, and how this guy, before he got his Netflix job, when he was a teenager, he worked at a movie store. And because he wanted to be able to recommend the best movies that people should watch based on who they are, he watched every movie in the movie store. Hmm. So he was watching movies all day, all night, for years and years. He watched every movie in this Blockbuster, wherever he worked, so that he could make these awesome recommendations. And you can imagine, you know, fast forward 20 years, this guy creating Netflix's recommendation algorithm is a pretty smart person to have with that job. But basically what he did as a teenager watching all those movies is he collected data in his head about what historically worked in movies for different people. Mm-hmm. And then what was kind of on the rise, what was trending, so that when people walked in, he could say, well, if you like these things from the past, I can tell you that this thing that's related to that is on the up. So watch it before it becomes popular. Hmm. And I think that's the kind of thing that you can do with data. If you have enough of that context, it's not about, you know, making the movie that everyone's seen already. It's about making or watching the movie that everyone's gonna see and gonna get excited about next. And data can, in that way of shoving you on the path, if you're paying attention to it and you use smart tools, it can help you do that. And that's how you actually use data with creativity to break through and not just be like everyone else.
Yeah. I think so many people think about creativity as, you know, in this kind of, as something that's granted by some external force. So it used to be the muses and now it's DNA or talent. But I think people think of creativity as, you know, you get fortunate, you get picked to be creative, and then, you know, some divine entity beams really cool ideas into your head. And I don't think, and I love the way that you guys are approaching storytelling, because I think pros understand creativity is just about problem solving. And actually kind of love that with your, you know, your Bilbo Baggins analogy, because it's like, you know, there he is, you know, like weird things happen and he's got to figure out, what do I have? You know, what resources do I have? What resources can I tap, and my friends and my companions, and then how are we going to deal with this problem and move on to the next thing? And that's it. That is a lot of what creative work is about. It's not, you know, waiting for divine inspiration. It's just more about, well, that's interesting. I wonder what I could use to solve that. That's kind of an interesting problem.
Yeah. You know, one of the most common definitions for creativity is connecting disparate or unrelated things. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing's made out of nothing, right? And so you go in the world and you get inspiration from different things, but creativity is when you assemble them, when you connect them. And, you know, so there's actually a study that I did for another project that I have coming out later this year, where I looked at basically did a study of people and how open-minded they were, how creative they were, and how basically open to new ideas and combining disparate ideas people are, and then what their habits are. And the upshot of one part of this study is, guess what? The more TV you watch, the more books you read, the more creative you are, the more open you are to making connections between disparate things. And all that is data. It's collecting information in your brain so that you can say, aha, what if we combine this with that? I think that the human brain has this capacity to do this. And a lot of people who are naturally very creative, they're passionate about it. They've been, you know, doing creative things from an early age. But all of us are naturally creative.
Yeah.
And a way to get better at it is actually to collect more things in your brain And this is where, yeah, travel and reading and even just watching lots of different kinds of TV can actually help you.
Yeah.
And I think another element too is just not being afraid to fail with your stories. You know, there's so much of a desire in content marketing is that we want to know that this is going to be a sure hit beforehand. And data can tell us that perhaps we're on the right track, but there's a certain element of just getting out there and creating stuff and experimenting and taking cues from your audience and figuring out what works best. I mean, a lot of what's in this book was culled from us publishing literally thousands of posts over the years that we wrote on the content strategist and LinkedIn and other places and understanding what topics struck the best chord with our audience. And that's the sort of topics that we focused on here.
And we even have a few posts that I think Joe's written about the posts that we've done in the past that almost got us fired because we took risks.
And now a lot of
those now don't seem so bad, but in the moment when you get the email from the CEO that's like, what the hell is this? And you freak out. But you know, things turn out all right. And you know, that's, you know, a couple dozen out of 1,000 posts, and that's what it was necessary for us to get to where we are.
Yeah. I was thinking about, like, we, Shane and I have this friend, Brian, who's actually with Shane in Mexico City right now. And Brian and I have been friends since college, and we've done a lot of traveling together. And, you know, when we were younger, we used to travel and stay at a lot of hostels. At hostels, you end up sitting around drinking beers at night and just telling stories. And, you know, even pre-naturally from just going and trying different stories that we tell together, you know, we'd pick up the stories at different points. We'd hone it each night at each hostel, figure out what our best stories were, where we should trade off the most, where we should cut out the fat. And that's the fun of storytelling, right? Is trying new things, getting it wrong, and then fixing it.
Yeah, there is a well-known writing teacher who I will not name who is reputed to have honed all of her best stories at AA. You know, she'd stand up and tell the story and see how people... There's a very important part, I think, about creativity in not getting so precious about one piece of content, not getting so attached to one blog post, one podcast episode, one ad if you're producing ads or you know, YouTube, you know, video, but really about produce, listen, learn, think about some things, produce some more, and the more you produce, the better you get, and you find that it is going to be 5% of what you produce that's going to get most of the attention. That's, I don't know of any way around that. I mean, maybe you can make it 8%, but you're not going to make it 80%.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Well, this has been very cool. I want to leave because you guys sent me a couple of bullet points and I just thought this was so enticing. So I want to end on this one, which is you make big promises. I like that. I like big promises. A simple formula for building an audience that loves you. So I think that's kind of irresistible. So lay it on me.
So I can start this. It actually ties in directly with what we were talking about. That if you look at, and then we dive into history a lot in our writing. If you look at the history of media, which is media is about, you know, saying something to a big audience, right? And getting that audience to care, to stick around, to pay attention. And, you know, in the business of media, to pay money for content or something else. So if you look at the history of media, there's kind of this crude pattern that emerges of how every successful media enterprise has happened. And essentially the pattern is you create content and then you get the content in front of people or you get people to come to it, which we call connect or engage. And then you see what happened and you optimize the next round. So we call this the flywheel. Create, connect, optimize. And you do this over and over and over again. You know, in the old days, you know, we write about the ancient Italian gossip writers in the Renaissance, how they would, you know, they'd run around to the churches and the, you know, the markets and everywhere, and they'd collect the gossip about, you know, Leonardo is dating so-and-so and this is happening up, you know, with the Pope or whatever. And they'd write these newsletters and then they'd run around town and distribute them. So, you know, they create the content, they gather the gossip, they, you know, write the newsletters. They'd actually use the printing press, which was a brand new technology, print it up, then run it around town. And then, what they found is a couple of things. Like, one is that the, you know, the gossip upset people. And so if you upset someone in power, well, it turns out you were liable to get your head cut off. So some of these writers started disappearing. And so, you know, they changed their strategy by taking their names off and off of the newsletters and posting them publicly at night rather than handing them out in the broad daylight. Second thing that they learned is that people really liked timely gossip, you know, gossip about what's going on now, not 2 days ago, because you're spending 2 days firing up this printing press.
Right.
So they actually reverted to handwriting for many years, for like a century, where all of these gossip newsletters were copied by hand because it ended up being faster, and that's what the audience wanted. So in kind of the quest to get information and stories out to people in the way that they wanted and the kinds of stories that they wanted without, you know, losing their heads, they basically went through this process a couple of times of creating, connecting, optimizing. You know, they connected in a different way by handing it out at night. They changed the format and the way that they labeled their newsletters. And you see this pattern over and over again. You see it in the newspaper wars in the 1800s. You see it with magazines. You see it with the internet. And this is one of the cool things that the internet and technology allows. So you can actually go through that process much more quickly. You can do it, you know, 100 times a day. You create a piece of content. You throw it out to some people on Facebook. You see what happens, how many people click or respond or share or get through it. And then you change it. And then you throw it out to some more people on Facebook. And you do that over and over again until it's perfect. And then you throw it out to your email list. That's the kind of thing that, you know, we can do now to build an audience and to get exactly an audience exactly what it wants using technology, but based on the same simple formula that's been happening since they were, you know, gossiping about Leonardo back in the day.
Yeah, human nature doesn't change that much.
Yeah, and we really see that if you look at like any very successful digital publisher in the modern age, they do this obsessively, right? Everyone from Upworthy, you know, Upworthy fell off because they didn't really figure out how to change their content enough. They got over-reliant on Facebook, but they're the fastest growing media company in history is because they would find and create all of this compelling content that other people weren't tapping into around social good. They would test 25 different ways of getting it out there through small Facebook ad A/B tests, through different email tests, and they'd optimize and they'd spin the flywheel faster and faster. And you've seen publishers of all kinds, from the Times, the Post, the Atlantic, learn to grow their audiences by doing this. And you know, there's a lot of things that marketers do differently than publishers do, but all good brands as well that build an audience do this as well. I'm sure Copyblogger does it. You know, we know HubSpot does it. We know we do it. We know GE does it. We know American Express does it. The brands that have been successful at building an audience are obsessed with testing what works and learning from that.
Yeah. And it's one of the things I love about it is you can do it if you're GE, but you can also do it if you are a freelance copywriter. You can do it if you have a little tiny e-commerce business selling potholders or something. I mean, you can do it at so many different levels. And in some ways it's kind of, there's a lot of freedom in being small because it's all about, I think, what really works is a lot of small experiments. Sometimes big organizations have a hard time remembering how to be small. It's very doable. It's very attainable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that mentality of no matter how big you are, I mean, I think that's why I like that we have spent so much time looking at history and principles, but the underlying principles are the same, whether you're big or small. And so you can act like a small, nimble organization if you focus on the principles and not on all the cruft that gets kind of built on top of things as our organizations get bigger and more complex.
Yeah. What did you call it? The organizational car wash? That's a very familiar process.
Watch out for the wax at the end.
Yeah. That's legal. I love my lawyer friends. No disrespect. All right. Well, this has been really fun. Thank you guys. This has been a really fun conversation. Finally, like, where can people get this? Where can people get the Storytelling Edge?
Yeah. So you can find it on, you know, all major retailers, Amazon, of course. It's on sale right now, less than $17. Just search for the Storytelling Edge, also on Barnes & Noble, Target. If you want any bulk order deals, if you find this to be something interesting for your team, we're giving away lots of goodies, which you can find at thestorytellingedge.com, just the title of the book.com. And if you even just buy one copy and you send your receipt to us, you could send it to actually our book marketing assistant, Kay Cordova, at contently.com. This is all on the website. We'll send you some bonus chapters and some goodies. So check it out. We'll literally do anything for you to buy this book.
You can see why Joe is the one that makes things happen. He's a great, you know, another thing too is we like encouraging people to buy books at local bookstores. So if you have a local bookstore, stop on over there, or there's also, we're from our website, you can find a local bookstore that has it too.
That is very cool.
Yeah, or just go into your local bookstore and be like, hey, why aren't you carrying this book? You really should be. And don't leave until they get it.
Bring all their coffee.
Bring it. We will just tweet at us. We'll get you some supplies delivered, some water.
We'll organize a flash mob, actually, to sit in your bookstore until it gets there.
There you go. That sounds like a party to me.
We're done.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. This has been Shane Snow and Joe Lazauskas. Thank you guys from Contently. A really cool conversation. Everybody, I think you will really benefit from everything that they've pulled together in the Storytelling Edge. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.